Hello, baby.
The Cocktail Nation.
Anatomy of a Lounge Lothario.
Hey, baby.
I got a lot of money.
Howard, please. This is beneath
you. No, this is exactly me.
Casanova. You are evil, Demeter.
What you call me? It's not true.
Is it joke, my darling?
Why do you men so treasure this joking so?
Do you love me?
What can I say when you ask? You shouldn't ask, you know. I'll tell you when I feel like it.
Would you like me to give you something to make you sleep?
Now, there's a good idea.
All right, then. Come with me.
This week, Day Llewellyn. One of the most relentless and prolific skirt chasers and partygoers of the 60s and 70s, moving through a heady demand of launches, exclusive nightclubs, exotic holidays and drink-fueled adventures. He was a fixture in gossip columns such as The Seducer of the Valleys and befriended writers such as Nigel Dempster. Llewellyn embodied that period in the 1960s, when English aristocrats stopped confining their social lives to ancestral homes and charity functions and became middlemen and fixers at the extravagant end of PR and business. The worlds of royalty and entrepreneurship, old Etonians and Arab-chasing opportunists, old money and new vulgarity all met with a resounding crash. Stories of his debauched lifestyle abound, lunching one day with the journalist Peter McKay at San Lorenzo in Knightsbridge. Llewellyn seemed to remember something important. He leapt from the table and returned an hour later. McKay asked what happened. He said, "I suddenly remembered I left my secretary chained up in the bath." He proudly boasted that in the late 60s and early 70s, he was getting through debutantes like a dose of salts. Although his career as hard-drinking Casanova started on a negative note, with his first dalliance, a older American woman, who he said smelt so disgusting that it put me off doing it again for several months. He racked up an impressive list of conquests. Orson Welles' daughter Beatrice, Roald Dahl's daughter Tessa, Lady Charlotte Curzon, to whom he proposed 100 times in the course of an evening, but she turned him down. Vanessa Hubbard, the niece of the Duke of Norfolk, who he married in 1980. It lasted 7 years and produced two daughters. Interestingly, that wedding to Vanessa had a rather interesting start. He drove up to the wedding, swigging a bottle of champagne, and at the church he extended a languid arm through the rear car window and handed the remains of the bubbly to a gang of local youths. His technique, he said, simply was to laugh women into bed. "I'm not one of these oily Italian method pullers," he confessed. 30 years later, and I still can't undo a bra. "The only trick I have is that I do not waver. I know what I want, and so do they." He fell in love in recent years with the Swedish interior designer Crystal Jurgensen and planned to marry her, but she dumped him after only 18 months because he kept altering the wedding plans. Writing about the affair, he revealed, "A few months after meeting her, I turned to her and I said to myself in the third person, 'You are the last great love of Day Llewellyn.' Given such an approach, it's surprising that they actually lasted as long as they did." His drinking was legendary. He drank ludicrous quantities of wine every day at lunch, dinner, and the cocktail hour in between, and prided himself on the ability to remain lucid and charming, even after bathfuls. And in case he might ever find himself stranded without the horrors, more alcohol, or a barman or waiter within yelling distance, he used to carry with him a briefcase, which he sewed two glasses and three bottles of port, brandy, and whiskey. Reflecting on his alcohol consumption, Llewellyn wrote, "How much did I drink? I've been asked that many times in my life, and the truth is, it's so much that I really can't quantify. But I do recall one particularly heavy night on my own when I consumed 8 bottles of wine, 1 bottle of vodka, 1 bottle of rum, and 1 bottle of port. People look unconvinced when I say this, but at 6 a.m, I was totally lucid." Now, his relationship with his younger brother, Roddy, a keen organic landscape gardener, deteriorated after Day blew the whistle on Roddy's affair with Prince Margaret in the 1970s. Now, this was covered quite extensively in The Crown, actually. In 2006, Roddy told the Daily Mail how he resented his brother's betrayal. His brother retorted by calling him a snob and a resentful, chippy little twerp, but they made up years before he died. He inherited the title of Baron in 1999 after his father's death, but he did himself a few favours with his Welsh neighbours. He bought a house in the South Wales villages of Aberbig and Lilaheth, and he turned his back on all things Welsh in 2003 after the cottages were vandalised. He claimed a new strain of xenophobic nationalism was in the valleys, and he objected to the promotion of the Welsh language, calling it an unhealthy, essentially racist agenda. He joined the UK Independence Party in 2007 running, and in the Welsh Assembly elections he came last, but he announced that he would only return to Wales in a coffin. And the neighbours retorted that he would not be missed. He died officially of bone cancer at the age of 62. He also had prostate cancer, diabetes, extreme anemia, cirrhosis of the liver, and he knew the real cause of all his illness, drink. He said, "I can't say that I regret my relationship with alcohol, as it was something I did awfully well. But let me say this, there's no difference between an alcohol diseased body in a hospital bed, whether it belongs to an old Etonian baronet like myself or a guy sleeping rough on the streets." Right up to the end, he was still drinking a glass of wine every day and telling women, "My dear, you're as pretty as a primrose." He hated being ill. "Before this," he said in hospital, "I was like someone in Bonfire of the Vanities. I was the king of the world. I was invincible, above the rules of society. Except I wasn't, and it damn near killed me." What an interesting fellow this guy is. Now, he's not like many of the Italian playboys, European playboys that we have spoken about on this show. And to be honest, in doing my research of him, yeah, De Llewellyn, not exactly the kind of guy that you sort of go, "Wow, he's really cool. What a cool sort of lifestyle this guy has." Not really. Basically, he was an alcoholic skirt chaser who, was an alcoholic in the truest sense of the word. A little bit of a lad about town, to be honest. Not exactly a classy kind of guy. I think if it wasn't for his status, his money, his titles, probably women would not have been attracted to him. I think he was, I'm not going to say a fraud, but certainly not the epitome of a lounge Lothario. I think he liked to play the role, but he did it in a bit of a lad's kind of way. So I can't say he's certainly not my favourite. I'll put it that way. He's definitely not my favourite. Wasn't really into sports cars, more into alcohol. I suppose he does kind of tick the box when it comes to Lounge Lotharios. He kind of died young, kind of, 62. Well, kind of, self-inflicted anyway. So there you go. That is De Llewellyn as we take a look at the anatomy of a Lounge Lothario. In Day's case, riddled with cancer and cirrhosis of the liver.